Welcome back to another episode of Frog Fever, a Big 12 basketball podcast brought to you by KillerFrogs.com. My name is Davis Wilson. My co-host is here with me, as always, Nick Jeremani. And we've got another great episode coming. I'll just tell you that. Last week we had redshirt freshman Isaiah Manning on. If you didn't listen to that podcast, do yourself a favor and do that. This week we have his fellow redshirt freshman, Jace Posey, on, and we'll bring him on in a few minutes. But before that, let's get into just some TCU, Big 12, transfer portal recruiting, coaches, all sorts of stuff happened this week. Yeah. What did you think of the week? I guess since we've last talked, big storylines, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the biggest storyline, I think, is obviously the Kentucky job, because we talked about last week how Scott Drew, I mean, we're talking Big 12-wise, like how Scott Drew was kind of one of the leading candidates for that right after Hurley got shut down. And his family, I think, got on a flight to Lexington and kind of visited it out, and they obviously didn't like it because Drew posted on Twitter the next day. He was at Mika Sita, I think was the name of the restaurant, and posted he was chilling in Waco. A few hours later, the Mark Pope thing kind of heats up, and then he's the coach at Kentucky at the end of the night. And it was kind of like a crazy pick because, you know, Kentucky's obviously one of the biggest blue bloods in college basketball, and getting the Kentucky job is a huge deal. And obviously, Mark Pope was the captain on that 96 Kentucky team, so that's kind of the connection there and probably the biggest reason why he got the job. But, yeah, I think it kind of came out of nowhere, and Kentucky fans were kind of, you know, shocked, I think, a little bit by it and critical of it, because he's been 0-2 in the NCAA tournament his coaching career and really hasn't done crazy things. You know, we've talked about a lot on this podcast that he did such a good job at BYU this year, integrating them in the Big 12 and having success right away. But, I mean, 13 months ago, he was finishing fifth in the WCC, and now he's the head coach at Kentucky. It's just a crazy circumstance. But after his induction ceremony, where they just packed Rupp Arena and brought in the whole 96 Kentucky team, and he was pulling out the trophy and hyping the guys up, I was actually a lot more optimistic and kind of bought in a little bit to what he's going to be doing there. I don't think it will be instant success like a Drew or a Hurley or a Nate Oates would bring like right away, but I honestly think it's a good hire for the Cats.
Yeah, we talked about last week that we had a feeling that this Kentucky job would shake things up in the Big 12 somehow, and we thought that would be Scott Drew leaving Baylor, going to Kentucky, but it's Mark Pope, BYU, and it's sad that we're not going to get to talk about him much anymore, because I enjoyed watching his teams. I think he's a great coach. I think we've talked about him a good amount over the course of the season, how we think he does a really good job. And I'll say this, I think Kentucky has tried it, you know, Calipari's way, where you know, it's this, Calipari's this massive name. He's one of the great coaches that we have. He brings in amazing recruits. He produces insane NBA talent. And now I think it's probably good for them to have a change of scenery. I think Calipari said that it's time for a new voice at Kentucky. And I think that like a not so huge name like Pope could be really good for Kentucky. And, you know, he's an insane offensive coach. You know, his teams are going to be a lot of fun. So I'm happy for him, and I'm excited to see what Kentucky does. It makes them, for me, it makes them a lot more likable, because I'm a Mark Pope fan. And then the other side of it is, you know, for Baylor fans who were worried about Scott Drew, I think we can put the worry to bed forever, because he turns down Louisville and Kentucky this offseason, both of which are really great jobs. And Baylor's a great job too, but there are not many jobs that are better in the whole country than Kentucky, I would say. You know, you have like UNC and Duke maybe, but Kentucky's right up there. And if he's turning down that job, I think Baylor fans can kind of relax and take a deep breath and say that he's probably there for you know, I don't want to guarantee he'll be there for the rest of his career, but turning down those two jobs in one offseason, where there's a lot of smoke about him leaving, is really huge for them in that program. And I think that, you know, they can kind of relax now.
Yeah, it was interesting to see that he didn't, because it was rumored that he went there. Like, he obviously didn't go with his family, so they were just kind of checking it out, and obviously decided that, you know, they wanted to stay in Waco.
Mm-hmm.
They picked Waco over Lexington pretty much. But yeah, that's a great point to you that, yeah, they can settle down, and obviously Booster stepped up probably and got there, but Baylor basketball is still going to be great coming into next year. But in terms of Pope to Kentucky, like, it's an interesting thing because we've seen, you know, BYU right away, Dallin Hall and Ali Khalifa hit the portal, I think, the day of, and I think it's rumored a lot that Jackson Robinson is going to hit the portal too, and that they could all go to Kentucky. So, I mean, those are three key pieces that probably some of the best pieces on BYU's team this year heading over. So they're going to have a completely different roster, but Pope knows the guys that he wants to bring in. And it's also interesting too, because it was rumored that Kentucky offered Dan Hurley $11 million a year, which is just a massive contract. And I think Pope's contract was around $5 million a year. So if Boosters were ready to give all that money to Hurley, then you have all this room of millions of dollars that you would have given up that you can then turn into NIL. You can offer bags, way bigger bags to NIL guys. And obviously Kentucky has that budget where they could do that. And if you're not wasting it all on one coach, then Pope's going to have some talent out there. So yeah, I don't think it'll be as crazy as a success because he's still not that marquee coach that I think a lot of top guys are going to want to like go to right away. But once he builds the culture there, I think it's going to be, I don't want to say home run hire, but that opening press conference was sick. How
that was insane.
How they packed Rupp that crazy for Pope, because it was obviously an interesting hire, but to support him like that right away. And he seems to have a lot of confidence going in there. So returning to where he played, and it's going to be super interesting to see how it all shakes out.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we don't have to get into this kind of argument now, but like there's not that big of a gap for me in terms of like coaching basketball. Like, you can put recruiting to the side, you can put all that to the side, but in terms of being a basketball coach, I don't think the gap between, this might be crazy, but I don't think the gap right now between Calipari and Mark Pope is that huge. I think that Calipari obviously has all this other stuff that comes with him. Like, he's a genius recruiter. He develops players better than probably anyone in the country. But he hasn't been winning. And he's had a lot of trouble in March, especially in the early rounds with these teams that you'd probably expect to go a lot further. And Mark Pope is a really good basketball coach. And I think that I was worried that like Kentucky fans would not love this hire. I think it's like a boring hire, but you know, he was obviously a huge part of that team in 96, and I loved how they packed it out for him. I'm excited to see how it goes, because I don't think it's all that big of a drop off when it comes to coaching. It's just going to be about how he can, you know, can he find the talent like they've been used to there at Kentucky? I think that's kind of the question.
Yeah. No, he plays that new style of play too, where it's a lot of threes, like a similar to a Nate Oates or guys like that who have kind of transitioned their game to this new brand of basketball that they're gonna shoot a lot of threes. They're gonna still put up a ton of points. And when you start getting those guys, those top tier talent come to Lexington, like it's gonna be a big deal. So I definitely think, I think it's going to be successful for sure. But then again, having such a controversial hire, it's going to be interesting to see how it shakes out.
Yeah. Yeah. And then on the BYU side, today they hired Kevin Young from the Phoenix Suns. He's like, I think he's the associate head coach there.
Yeah.
I saw maybe Woj tweeted that he's the highest paid assistant in the NBA. So he's like he's a great coach. And I honestly don't know a ton about the way he coaches or the way he recruits or anything like that, but he knows BYU, and I think that could be an exciting hire.
You talk about like styles of coaching as well. Like, he's very new school. Like, this Young's been talked about for NBA head coaching job, and I think he even interviewed with like the Hornets and the Nets already for this year for their new opening. So he was obviously a hot commodity, and as you said, one of the highest paid assistants. I think he was born in like Salt Lake City too, so he's obviously got that connection to Utah. But yeah, landing such a big basketball mind is in a guy from the NBA is interesting because they kind of bring that same type of thing where you know, he hasn't had any college coaching experience, so you don't know what he's going to bring from the recruiting side of things. But I mean, if you have a basketball mind, obviously, you know, working with the Suns, who's had worked with a ton of the top NBA talent, and I think he's coached in the G League for years too, so he knows like younger guys as well. Is developing talent, and yeah, obviously, we don't know anything about what he can do in the college game, but again, another interesting thing to see where you're bringing in a basketball mind that has coached for a long time, who's knows how to construct an offense. Like, you want to see how that translates collegely, because we've seen NBA college not translate the same. So it's definitely an interesting hire. You know, you see a lot of college guys stank like hiring from the college landscape, but yeah, I think he coached at Utah Valley a little bit, like way back in the days, but that's about all he's got. And he obviously knows Utah, so it's a right fit in that sense.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how that'll all kind of shake out for him. I think, I mean, BYU people love him. So I've seen a lot of like former players who have, you know, come out and kind of expressed their excitement for him. So I think that's cool. Like I saw Danny Ainge, the, you know, he was involved with the Jazz for a long time. He spoke out about it. So I think like the, you know, the area around him is excited. He, you know, he's, you know, known there, and I think, they're excited for him. So I'm excited to get to watch his teams play.
Yeah. And just seeing how he constructs the roster too. Cause like yeah. I said, Pope's probably going to bring a lot of his guys with him. So to see who'll stick around and see who won't, it's obviously interesting when you bring in a new coach roster wise.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Speaking of bringing in new players and reconstructing your roster, TCU, we'll get into their stuff now. Frankie Collins, the Arizona State guard that TCU got to know a little bit a couple years ago in the tournament, he has committed to TCU. Tell us about Frankie Collins and how that recruitment went and all that, and what is TCU getting?
Yeah, this is huge for TCU. I was so pumped when I saw them land this, because they needed a point guard, they needed a defender, they needed a guy who can play in transition and a guy who can create shots in the half court. And Frankie checks all these boxes. Like we said, like he was the best player on Arizona State last year. He led him in points, assists, steals. I think he was like ninth in steals in the whole nation. But throughout this whole recruiting process, the guards we've looked at who could handle the ball, it was Doug McDaniel, it was Dante Maddox, and it was Frankie Collins. And when Doug went to K-State and Dante took us off his list the other day, like this was kind of a must-have for us, I would say, because these were the guys we're looking at, and we were able to land them. And I honestly even like him better than a Dante Maddox in terms of just being a complete player, like being able to defend at a high rate, being able to, you know, because our guards last year didn't handle pressure and they didn't defend crazy well consistently. And Frankie does both of those things. Yeah, we saw him with that poster against us in March Madness. We even saw him last year to start against us. But he was a top recruit out of high school. He's kind of lived up to that so far. And he's going to be the guy handling the ball for you know, starting point guard, handling the ball, probably lead us in points, to be honest. And he's going to be the best player on the team, and most likely. And I'm super excited to see what he's going to bring. And I was so pumped when I saw this news come out Saturday, I think.
Yeah. This is probably your star player. Like, this is probably the guy for TCU next year. I am with you. I'm pretty excited about it. KenPom has him. He was 13th in the country in steal percentage last year. So he defends, which is something that it's clear that Jamie Dixon is prioritizing defenders in the portal, first with CJ and now with Frankie Collins coming in. He started his career at Michigan, played 2 years at Arizona State. He scores the ball pretty well. Like, I think he had like a 25-point game in December. I mean, he's a really good player, and I'm excited to see, like with him and Ernest Udeh, I'm excited for that kind of two man. I think that'll be pretty fun. He just kind of he opens a lot of things up for TCU on the offensive end in the half court, I think, because he's experienced. He's not going to panic. I think he's a point guard. You know, he passes the ball well. He's more of a true playmaker, and I think that's something also that TCU lacked in a way last year. So, I think he's a really good player, and it's interesting. I was trying to remember if anyone on the roster from that team that he played against in March a couple of years ago. I don't know if anyone who's on that team is going to be playing with him.
Yeah.
This year. Is that right?
No. Yeah. Maybe Lundblad, I would say, but
yeah,
like
Lundblad.
No rotational players for sure. Yeah. I mean, we lost. Yeah. Every rotational player from that team 2 years ago is.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a completely brand new thing. It's completely full circle because I think a lot of that was one of the signature moments of that game and that tournament for real. Like that post there where Chuck was sick, but no, I called him on Twitter the best isolation player and ball handler we've had since Mike Miles or even Damien Bob, if you want to put him in that sense. But in the half court, you need guys who can create for themselves. And he has super high percent, like he's in the super high percentile for isolation play. And he can create his own shot when things kind of come down. So I think he's going to elevate that sense. And I think probably the only down thing is that he's not like a tremendous shooter, but he's still a kind of a volume shooter in that sense where he takes lead and, you know, he'll probably improve on it. You see college players take a big jump on that right away. But I mean, he's just a dog too. Like you love guys that give complete effort. And I think that's what helps him defensively huge. Cause he is a little bit undersized, but he has a good body that allows him to play like a dog and take contact. And he's going to give 100% full effort, and he has 1 year left of eligibility too. So he's going to be playing like his college days are running out, and I'm stoked for this ad.
Yeah, and just to mention some of his stats from last year. So you mentioned his steals. He averaged 2.6 steals per game last year, which is, you know, what was that in the country?
I think it was ninth in the country. Yeah.
I mean, that's absurd. That's something TCU needs. Just his on ball ability I think he's a really smart player. Like all these things that we're mentioning are things that TCU needed on last year's team. So getting a guy like Frankie Collins. And the one thing is, I think he'll fit right in here because he shot 57.6% from the free throw line last year. So
yeah.
Hopefully, you know, he and TCU as a team can improve on that. But yeah, yeah. He shot the best he shot from three in his career was two seasons ago. He shot basically 34%. Last year, he dipped down to 31%. So he's probably not going to give you much from behind the arc. But, you know, he's been around for a long time. So that's also something that can improve. So I think now you could probably look for TCU to get guys who can shoot. You know, those 3-and-D type guys who can defend and shoot, because as of right now, as it stands, they don't have a ton of shooting. And,
yeah, for sure.
Transitioning into who could be next. Talk us through some of the guys that TCU are zeroing in on and are, you know, maybe visiting or whatever.
Yeah, you know, they have a lot of guys that they've talked to, obviously, but just like every college. But Noah Reynolds visited last week, and I think it went very well. So he's a guy at Green Bay that averaged 20 a game last year. And when you get a 20 a game score in college basketball, you know, that's great. He played at Wyoming a couple years ago. So, getting another – I think he's 6'3 guardy. He can handle the ball and create shots himself too. So – having a backcourt like that with if he comes along and comes with Collins would be so huge. Joshua Jefferson, I know him very well because I'm also a big St. Mary's fan. So
oh, yeah, that's right.
So he's visiting right now as we speak. He's a power forward, like back to the basket, insanely good defender. You know, he still works on his shooting a lot, but he was a true sophomore, so he's got 2 years left. And that would be awesome just because he's built very well and strong and would boost our defensive game extremely well. I wonder how he'd fit from a transitional standpoint because St. Mary's obviously plays such a big half court style of play, and he kind of comes from that, but he's got athleticism and just bringing that defender to the game. And he dropped double digits for the Gales last year. So that would be super cool for me to see, just because I've watched him a lot the past couple of years. That's a big forward get. And but another guy that they have scheduled is, I think, on the 20th, is Brendan Wenzel out of Wyoming. He actually played with Noah Reynolds for a season a couple of years ago, but he's like a 6'6", 6'7" guard who I think can play that three, and he's a really good shooter. I think he dropped like 12 points a game last year. So I could see them getting a combo of Reynolds and Wenzel would be my best guess, because they play together and they kind of, you know, they know their games, and Wenzel gives you that three guy that can shoot well. So those are three guys to, I think, watch a lot closely and see where it takes us. But everything's so fluid too. Like, they could have another visit coming up soon, but if I were to, I would say they add two more guys safely, and I would say that those three guys are some likely guys to keep an eye on.
All right. And Brennan Wenzel is a Texas kid that is also working in TC's favor. I think
he's San Antonio.
Yeah, he's a San Antonio guy. Going back to Noah Reynolds, I'm looking at some of his game log here from last season, and he had a game so this was against Wright State on the road. He scored 30 points and had eight assists and eight rebounds. So, I mean, that stuck out to me. He just fills it up. It seems like he has, I mean, his level of competition obviously is not crazy when you're playing at Green Bay, but I mean, he played like the first game of the season, he played against Iowa State and he had 14 points, five assists. So, you know, I think that'd be cool. And then, yeah, you mentioned your guy, Joshua Jefferson. Let's see. He was also a guy, he ranks in steal percentage last year. He was 171st, but still, I would say that's pretty good with the amount of guys you have in college basketball. Defensive rebound percentage, he was 64th in the country last year. So just, again, it's clear what Jamie Dixon's doing. He's trying to get a lot of guys who address some of the glaring issues that last year's team had, which I think is the right way to go about this.
Yeah, no, I love, yeah, obviously I know pretty much a lot too much on Josh Jefferson, which is because I watched pretty much every one of his games last season. He had a knee injury to end the year too. It was kind of hurt the Gales tournament wise. So it'll be interesting to see how he bounces back from there. But yeah, he'd upgrade us, him and Collins, from a defensive standpoint, upgraded us so much from last year's team and kind of improved that, along with CJ Walker, who's obviously known for his defense as well.
Yep.
So that would kind of fix those issues. And I think Reynolds and Wenzel are more offensive guys. So if you had a combo, you know, I think we're doing a good job getting a combo of guys that we need. And obviously, yeah, you still have Uday and Posey and Manning coming back. And, you know, you have kind of a little foundation that you're building. And I think Dixon's done a great job in the portal so far. And I think some of these guys, like, you know, Reynolds, I think the Reynolds visit went very well. So I would say that if he comes here, that would be likely, and maybe we'll see how Jefferson and Wenzel go, but I'm optimistic about what this team can bring and see what it got going on there.
Do you expect the next year's team, like some of these freshmen that are coming in, a part of that big time class Jamie got, do you expect a lot of those guys to contribute right away? Because it doesn't seem like they've gotten I don't think they're, I mean, you say they're only probably going to get two or three more guys, which seems right when you look at the numbers that you have on the roster already. So do you expect these freshmen to like come in and play right away?
Yeah, I do think a couple of them will, because we've seen Jamie's rotations go deep, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
And so let's say if you look at the roster, you have Frankie Collins, you're probably going to get a transfer guard. Yeah. Probably going to get another transfer forward, and then CJ Walker and Uday. And then you probably, there's no news on Esam yet, but, and no news on Jameer yet, but I don't think it's looking likely for Jameer. And especially when you're looking at these guards so heavily, I don't think they're optimistic about what that waiver is coming back yet. But so you have Isaiah and Jace will play minutes off the bench. If you have Esom there, then that's three. But yeah, Jamie went 10 deep last year, so I could see our guy, friend of the pod, Micah, getting some minutes, obviously being the third highest recruit at that wing spot. And I would see Jace being the ball handler off the bench, and then Isaiah being like that three spot. So there's like your three, Esom as your big, and then maybe Punch can see some minutes too. So I would say if they want to roll 10 deep, then they play Micah and Punch most likely, because those are your two ESPN 100 guys. But so either that would have to happen, or they go with a slider rotation, but injuries come up too. So I think having these freshmen ready in minutes would be big. And I could see Micah and Punch getting minutes, you know, early on in the season as well as anything.
I think this year for TCU is going to be unlike anything we've gotten used to or seen really from TCU, maybe ever. Like you have this class coming in that is the best in TCU history. Some of the best players in the entire country, you know, are coming. Some of the best players in the state of Texas are coming. So I think it's going to be a lot more youth, a lot more like, I don't know. I'm really excited to see how Jamie deals with this roster, because obviously when you take like four freshmen, you can't plan on redshirting all of them, right? Because you just don't have the roster space. You don't have the numbers for that. So he obviously is expecting these guys to come in and play immediately, which we haven't really seen that since like Mike Miles, I feel like.
Yeah, he's the last freshman, yeah.
So it's pretty exciting. We all know how Mike Miles turned out. So it'll be interesting to see how this roster continues to morph and take shape and all that. And it'll be cool to keep an eye on heading into next year, like what some of this is going to look like.
Yeah, it is interesting because you're counting on a lot of things to go right that you haven't known before. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you're counting on Frankie Collins to come in and be your best player most likely. You're counting on two or three transfers to start for you. You're counting on Jace Posey and Isaiah Manning to be successful after, you know, not having any college basketball experience. You're counting on Uday to take the next step if you want to be successful. So I think expectations definitely should be tampered at the start, as much as it sucks because we've seen us be so competitive the last 3 years. But I mean, if you wait for development on these guys, like if these guys stick around, you have such a good foundation to lay on. And I'm excited, like long term, about what this group can bring, because these guys are legit, and it seems like they're all kind of bought into what we have to do. But we saw in 21-22 that team, when they brought in DB, you know, you're counting on Mike to be the guy. DB hadn't had any real experience. Eddie hadn't had any experience. You know, E-Man was coming in from A&M where he was kind of the guy, but still you don't really know with transfers. Like they were almost like just playing loosely with little expectations, and it worked out then. So it'll be a fun year to see not just wins and losses, but development for these guys and seeing how these transfers gel, because I could see them obviously making another NCAA tournament just because of what has happened the last 3 years. But it's going to be interesting to see how this team turns out, and this roster could be fun to watch and easy to root for sure.
Yeah, definitely. All right, let's move on to Mike. So Micah Peavy commits to Georgetown. He obviously decided to enter the transfer portal. We had seen that he was hearing from a lot of these big schools, big name schools. There was at least a possibility he was going to consider returning to TCU, but he ends up going to Georgetown. I'm rooting for him, obviously. And I think that could be an interesting fit. I think he could take a step up there. But what did you make of that decision from him?
Yeah, I was kind of shocked, to be honest, because obviously Cooley has the big pull, and it makes sense because he can land that big in Georgetown's basketball department is obviously big there, and they probably have some money. But it said he chose Georgetown over Houston, Kansas, K-State, and Creighton, and all those have been wildly more successful than Georgetown the past like 5-10 years, and maybe even longer than that. So it probably like being honest, it probably came down to a NIL slash opportunity type thing. Like he'll probably be Georgetown, either Georgetown's best player or one of them. But yeah, I mean, because if you look at them from a competitive standpoint, like TCU probably more likely to be competitive for them next year. So it really doesn't make much sense from that sense going, making that move there. But yeah, he probably got a nice NIL package if I were to guess. I don't know anything, but it was a little shocking and interesting to see that turn out there. But yeah, as you said, he was such a good frog and he was part of the best eras in TCU basketball history. So I'm rooting for nothing but the best, and I'll definitely be tuning into some Hoya games this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's always weird when you see like Kansas and Houston or Creighton get turned down for a program that's not really even close to where they are. But with this kind of new era of college sports, there are a lot more factors that go into these decisions than just like the program, you know, if they win, whether, you know, whether or not they win. It's financial now with the NIL stuff. So there's all sorts of factors. It's hard to really make a judgment on why someone makes a decision, but because they're, you know, again, there's just so many things that are going on that we don't necessarily know about. So it is an interesting decision. And, you know, I'm, you know, definitely rooting for him. He's super easy to root for. He worked really hard and he improved a ton over his, I guess it was what, 3 seasons at TCU, 2 seasons at TCU?
Yeah, three.
Three.
Yeah, he came from Tech. Yeah, he was there that first year coming off the bench for Chuck. And then obviously he was one of the best players last year, one of the best defenders in the nation, in my opinion. So, yeah, he definitely left his mark on the Frogs. And it'll be interesting seeing the way it turns out there.
Yeah. And then last thing to touch on before we talk to Jace, Jacoby Coles. We saw a tweet recently that, you know, some schools he's hearing from. He just recently came off a visit to SMU, you know, right across town. Auburn, Grand Canyon, Mississippi State, and Kentucky are other schools that he's hearing from. It's a kind of a random assortment of schools, but there are some good options there for him. And he's another guy that I think, like, when he's obviously he had some injury stuff this year that kept him out for a little bit. And before the injury, he was playing better than we'd ever seen him play. And he came back, you know, he eventually was able to get to a spot coming off the bench where he was a regular contributor again. But when he's healthy, we saw like he's a serious player. He can make a lot of teams better. And I'm curious to see, you know, where he'll end up. And if it's like SMU, I think that'll be pretty interesting. But some good options there. Maybe, you know, Mark Pope to following him to Kentucky would be interesting. But yeah.
Yeah. Another guy I root for too. And yeah, I wouldn't like to see him in an SMU uniform, but obviously with Andy Enfield there, there's probably a bigger pull for SMU than there has been previously. But yeah, I mean, Auburn, Mississippi State, Kentucky, obviously. Yeah, Pope knows him well at this point. And Grand Canyon as well, probably a good opportunity for him. So I'm excited to see where he's going to go. And yeah, same type of deal where you wish he was here, but you're still pulling for him in the end. And yeah, again, you don't know what's leading him here. Like, there's so much stuff with NIL and stuff nowadays that you just don't know the backstory behind or why he left or stuff like that. But it'll be interesting to see, because SMU is the only visit that he's taken publicly so far. So if he goes there, that would kind of be a tough pill to swallow for Frog fans. But it is what it is at the end of the day.
Yeah, and then we have to mention his big shot against Arizona State a couple of years ago. Huge shot. I mean, honestly, probably one of the biggest shots in the history of the program.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, just massive. And that, along with there are a bunch of other big moments that he had. So, for you know, I think Frog fans, there's no reason to have any ill will towards either of these guys. They, like you mentioned, they're a part of the best era in the history of TCU basketball. They were huge contributors on those teams. And it was cool to see each, both of them, you know, get better and contribute more to the team as the years went on.
Yeah, to your point about him playing through injury last year too, like he was playing with, I think it came out that he was playing with acute plantar fasciitis, I think is how you call it.
Yeah.
So that's like a lingering foot thing that kind that of sucks. Was with him all year.
Yeah.
But I mean, even with that, he still put up 10 points a game, you know, 49% from the field. He shot 42 from three, which will be tough to replace for the Frogs, and 88% from the line. So, yeah, that's a big shooting, and he was the best player in the tournament game. So he's going to be – we're going to need to definitely fill the offensive void with him. And he was probably the best Frog player off the bench the past couple of years. So that's a lot of production we lost, and we're going to have to fill that for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's I'm excited to see where he ends up, because he's a guy I will definitely root for. It'll be tough, you know, obviously if it's SMU, but he's got good options, so I'm excited to see what he decides. All right. Let's take a quick break and get Jace Posey in to talk all things recruitment, TCU, Isaiah Manning, all that good stuff next.
Yeah, for sure. I'm excited for this one. Awesome. Okay, now on Frog Fever Pod, we got another special guest. We had redshirt freshman on Isaiah Manning last week, and we got the other redshirt freshman, Jace Posey, coming on this week, track and basketball star. And Jace, thank you for coming on. I want to start from recent events. So your first track meet kind of blew up over this weekend. You jumped 7.5, 2.15 meters in your debut Friday, which is the fourth highest in outdoor history. And I read that, you know, obviously you're a basketball star too, and I read that your track coach in high school saw you just jumping in basketball and wanted you to try a long jump. Is that true, and were you always kind of passionate about track?
I didn't know about high jump until the track coach came out and reached out to me. I guess he seen me playing in the gym, running and jumping. So he reached out to my parents at first, and they shared the word with me. And when track season came around, I went out to go out and try it. And I just picked up on things kind of quick, and I became pretty good at it. And just, I know I'm able to do it. So if I had the opportunity to do it here, why not? Yeah.
I see here that your PR in this went from 6'8" to 7'4.25" from your sophomore to your junior year. How did you make that big of a jump in such a short amount of time?
Well, I would have never thought of the 7'4" number at all my sophomore year. It still sounds crazy when I think about it. But, I mean, I just set a goal that I wanted to jump to each season. And sophomore year, 6'8" was the goal because it broke the school record. So that's what I wanted to get my sophomore year. But going into junior, I'm like, the next step is going to be 7 foot. So the whole year, we're jumping, training to jump 7 foot. And I think I jumped at one meet before state, but I knew I could get it. So I jumped 7, and I just like, I'm not going to stop. So I just kept on going up. And they said the state record was 7'4", and they said I could go up a quarter of an inch. So I was like, I'm going to take the opportunity to break the record. And that's how it happened.
Yeah. And obviously, like, getting recruited as a major athlete too is massive. Did wanting to play at a school that let you do both track and basketball play a choice in your school choice?
I didn't play too big of a choice, but if a place offered it, I was probably just going to take the opportunity because of the doors it can open.
Yeah, there you go. All right. So getting into like the basketball side of things now, obviously your dad is James Posey, played many years in the NBA. He's now coaching in the NBA. Growing up around basketball and your dad in the league, did you always know that you wanted to play basketball?
Yes, I've always known that. I've always enjoyed the game. I love playing. I love watching it. And just seeing the opportunity that these guys have, and the lifestyles that they live, and the things they could do with their platform, I just want an opportunity to do that. So that's really what I think of every time I'm in the gym, is that I could be in their shoes. I could be doing this for my family's name, all this to just really help me on later on in life, live a comfortable lifestyle.
Yeah, and growing up, you know, as you were starting to get serious about basketball, your dad was assistant coach for the Cavs. And did you get to grow up around like Bronny Bryce and all these type of guys who were around those Cavs? And did that help, you know, feeding off of other NBA guys to know what basketball recruitment would be like?
Well, this was really all before people were getting recruited. This is me in middle school. But yeah, I know Bryce and Bronny. And whenever I went to school in Houston at this time, my dad had a place up in Cleveland. But whenever I went to go visit, I would most likely see him at the games, and we'd just be kids. We'd just be playing basketball or just joking around. They're good people. But yeah, I have a lot of good memories, a lot of friendships made over that time. But that was all kind of like about the recruiting question. Like that was all before, you know, schools getting in contact and you just kind of plan for the fun of it.
Yeah. Having a dad that was, you know, obviously so big into basketball and is now coaching, does like after you played a game, is he, you know, is he coaching you in a way, or is he letting you and your coaches kind of deal with that?
He gonna let me and the coaches figure it out. He usually has a lot to say, but you wouldn't know that. He's always very, or at least after my games, he's always very just calm and, you know, just stone faced. You don't know how to read him. Even if I go off for this amount of points and play this well, or if I play bad, he always gonna look the same. And sometimes you gotta ask it out of him. Ask him what he saw, what he thought about the game. And yeah, other than that, you kind of gotta pry him open to get those questions.
Sure.
Yeah. He has it in his head.
Yeah, for sure. And throughout high school, as you start to get you know, more notably better, you got invited to top 100 camp. You were all Greater Houston Player of the Year, McDonald's All-American nominee, just so many accomplishments. What was the moment where you knew that you were legit and a top player in the country?
It was just something. It wasn't I don't know how to put it, but like it was just something I knew in my head at a point. I was like, I could do this. I can compete with the guys who say are this and that. Like I could go at it with them. And I think the NBA Top 100 camp really put a spotlight on it for me, because you got the top 100 players in the nation, all these big names you see on YouTube, Instagram, social media, you share on the court with them, you either competing or you're playing with them. You just get to really see, I guess, their whole complete player, either just playing against them or getting to know them, seeing how they manage on and off the court. But I think that was a moment where, like, I realized the turning point's right there, and I just got to keep it going.
Mm-hmm. So your finalists in your recruitment were TCU and George Mason, and you took a visit to TCU and canceled some of your other visits, I think, like, to Vanderbilt and Arizona. Did you make your decision to come to TCU on that visit, or when did that happen?
I'm gonna say I always kind of knew, but it wasn't that simple as I'm saying it, but I always kind of knew that I wanted to go to TCU. It was just a school that I liked the most. The coaches from TCU kept in contact the most, and I liked what I was being told. So I didn't really have a decision before then, but I had an idea. So I took the TCU, I took the George Mason visit, and then I maybe had just a little off time down period, not doing much, just really talking about it with family and friends. And I mean, I don't know the day, but I mean, I was like, I want to go to TCU. So I did a little podcast with my dad. It's called The Postcast. And it's on YouTube somewhere, but you probably watch it. And that's where I verbally announced my commitment to TCU.
Cool.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously huge get for TCU. You're the top five recruit in TCU history. And knowing that, was it difficult for you knowing you had a red shirt, or did you like enjoy part of the process along the way?
I mean, it was real difficult for me. Nothing too crazy that I couldn't get over, but I mean, this whole time you're getting recruited and then you go through some of the summer workouts, you think you're doing all this to play, and then they come and tell you this is what we're gonna do this year. Kind of heartbroken in the moment, but I'm glad I redshirted this year. I enjoyed just getting the, I guess the bench experience. You see a lot when you're on the bench, and you notice the little things like players' attitudes, this and that, and how they interact with other players and the fans, and how you kind of want to be like. You kind of get to just analyze everybody, and then just redshirting allowed me to work on my craft, my handle, my jump shot, and it took a weight off my shoulders in practice. It was like I'm just going at nobody, and if I mess up, like I'm not losing playing time. Like there's nothing really to lose. Like I can play as hard as I want and go at these guys. If I mess up, on to the next play. So redshirting was hard in the beginning, but I made the most out of it, and I'm glad I did it.
Awesome. Yeah, in this kind of age of college athletics, it's rare. It's sometimes becoming more rare for guys to stay the course at one school, especially after maybe they redshirt when they weren't necessarily expecting to. What was the decision like for you just to remain at TCU if there was a decision? And you know, I know your dad played at Xavier for multiple years. Did that play any factor in your decision to stay, or how did that go down?
Well, I think TCU, I think they had the best plan for me. They have the best opportunity for me. You know, a lot of guys are leaving, a lot of guys coming in, and a lot of guys are going to be trying to earn minutes and fight for this and that spot. So I know I'm capable of doing that, and I'm excited that I get the privilege to do that. And I think that's the best opportunity for me.
Yeah, you talking about going at guys in practice without any repercussions, and Isaiah was talking about last week about being a shit talker during practice. Do you take your you identify yourself as a shit talker and like really as a dog, or are you more of like a quiet guy who lets your play talk for itself?
I'm not as much as a trash talker as Isaiah, but I'll talk some trash, but not everybody gonna know. It's just me and you, and like you'll hear it, but nobody else will hear it, and you looking at me all crazy, but not gonna be too loud about it, but you're gonna hear it.
Did getting to redshirt with Isaiah, did that help the redshirt process at all, that you weren't doing it by yourself?
Yeah, it helped 100%. I had somebody I could relate to. We were supposed to feel the same things, and we just talking about all the emotions we're going through, how we feel about this and that. But by myself, I don't think I would have been able to do that at all. It would have been very tough. Like going back to the dorm, Isaiah's my roommate. Like I go back to the dorm with Isaiah. We both redshirting. It would have really sucked if only one of us had the red shirt. That would have been the worst feeling for me or him. I know deep down one of us would have been feeling some type of way, but I'm glad we both got to experience this.
Yeah, no, we saw PJ Haggerty a couple years ago. He was the only guy to redshirt, and then he was out of here. So you wonder if that played an impact to that. But yeah, you talk about living with Isaiah right now. What's it like living with Isaiah as a roommate?
He's very loud and interesting individual. You never know what's up with him. You always hear music coming from his room. But we get along. Sometimes we'll go outside and play beach volleyball or Chick-fil-A right outside. But he's a good roommate. 5-star rating.
Okay, 5 star. There you go. So for TCU fans, I guess, who have not gotten a chance to see you play a lot, how would you describe your game to them?
You're gonna get an energetic guard who could finish around the basket. He'll knock down some shots, and he could play defense. And I could jump high.
Yeah, so we know that for sure.
You'll see an athletic two-way player.
Yeah, and people always do the NBA comparison question. I've seen some stuff where you've compared yourself to guys like LeBron and Harden, and something that sticks out to me about those guys is that they're a ball handler who can kind of dish the rock a little bit and obviously score as well. I mean, those are two of the best players of all time. But do you take pride in your ball handling and playmaking, and do you see yourself being a primary ball handler at TCU?
I'm gonna do whatever the coach wants me to do, but I'm not afraid to have the ball in my hand. I work on my ball handling anytime I'm in the gym, do a couple dribble moves to start my day off. But I mean, I take pride in my finishing more than anything, I think. Everything comes with it, but if you get to the basket and can't finish, you're just dribbling and going from point A to point B.
Mm-hmm.
So I take a lot of pride in my finishing.
That's true.
All right, switching back to like roommate stuff. I know you guys play some 2K. Who's the better 2K player between you and Isaiah?
We keep score, and right now he's up on the score. He's up, I think, four or five games.
Okay.
And we got a couple games in the log, but he's gonna say he's better. But it's just a long backstory. So when we started playing, we were playing on an easier mode.
Okay.
So he got Giannis shooting fadeaway threes.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff happening. That's not supposed to happen.
Yeah.
Giannis could do it, but it's just not that common. He was doing it consistently. So he was racking up a couple wins there. We went up a difficulty, and the games kind of evened out. Like, they were more competitive, more realistic, more fun. So that's how it's going. The games are usually getting competitive, but he's up right now, 5-4 games. So he could say he's better, but all I got to do is go on a little running streak, and I'm good.
Yeah. No, yeah, I mean, it's not an easy mode. I mean, that shooting meter is crazy. You got to get on Hall of Fame to be able to get it right for sure. But
Hall of Fame, not realistic at all. I ain't gonna lie. I do not. We don't play on Hall of Fame. I think we played the one right below it. But Hall of Fame,
yeah, like All-Star,
I think
it
takes the fun out of 2K.
No, yeah. I agree too. I mean, it's like no shots are being made. You have like Steph Curry, and then he's you got to get it perfect.
You have to get it perfect.
Yeah.
Come on now.
No, for sure. Okay, going back to your high school days a little bit, I saw some stuff where people used to call you Bobby Shmurda because of that old haircut, and you kind of look like him a little bit, people were saying. So would you ever go back to that hairstyle and embrace that look?
I don't see myself doing that anytime soon. But when it comes to it, I'm going to have to embrace it. I'm going to have to keep being me. Yeah. And I don't know how it's going to be without my hair. I think my hair is just – it just adds to my personality. That's how I feel. And I feel like without it, I lose a piece of me.
Sure. Speaking of, like, Bobby Shmurda, what are your music preferences? Who are some of your, like, favorite artists right now?
My favorite artist right now, I'm going to have to say Drake.
All right.
I'm going to have to go with Drake. I like DaBaby. Lil Yachty makes some bangers. I'm probably forgetting about somebody that I listen to a lot, but I'm gonna have to say Drake the Baby and Lil Yachty. That's what I listen to most.
Yeah, Isaiah was talking about on Twitter the other day, listen, that woman rappers are his favorite rappers. Like, do you agree with that take? And who are some of your favorite? You, Sexy Red guy, Lotto, Cardi, any one of those?
Sexy Red got some bangers, but I don't think she, like, everybody's a rapper now.
Yeah. Like,
everybody's a rapper now. So I don't know what to really count as rap or just music, but she makes good music, but I don't think she's one of the best rappers. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Respect. Yeah, right. I know what you mean.
Yeah. But females rapper or female artists I listen to some Beyonce. Not too much.
There you go.
Yeah.
A little bit.
She's on that country now. Some of that stuff's pretty damn good.
She's trying something.
were you watching Iowa and Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and all of them when it was going on with Isaiah? We talked about it with him. I know he was tuned in, but what did you What are your thoughts on Caitlin Clark's game?
It's crazy. It's just crazy she could do it with a basketball. Like, she's real life pulling up from far.
Yeah.
She's her name going across the country. Mm-hmm. They have her name on the court, and they're retiring her number already.
Yeah, that is crazy.
That's crazy. All these endorsement deals. Like, her life is probably insane right now. She goes anywhere, people know who she is. Yeah. She could hoop.
She's like easy mode Steph Curry, 2K, pulling up from everywhere.
Yes.
Thinking about it too, you know, obviously back to your dad a little bit, but growing up around so many NBA players, obviously you're around LeBron a lot too. I just wanted to know, like, is LeBron like by far your GOAT in that sense?
GOAT as a basketball player?
Yeah.
100%.
Is your GOAT?
Greatest basketball player ever. I don't think it's no debate.
Is there any recruitment there trying to get Bronny to TCU? I know he's in the portal.
I sent him a text message. I sent him a text message, but I was just checking on him and stuff, just making sure he's doing well.
I like that move.
But yeah, you know, not too much going on, but I sent him a text, and I mean he'll make the right decision whether he goes to the league or he goes back to college. I think he'll do what he needs to do.
Yeah, and I guess like growing up around the NBA, do you have a memory or a story that sticks out to you about meeting a player for the first time or anything like that that you got an opportunity to do?
It's not one of the most memorable, but it's something that'll probably just stick with me for a while. 2016 NBA All-Star Weekend, it was in Toronto, and I think during like the Rising Stars game. I was in a locker room and I was talking to Carl Anthony Towns, and like at that moment, I realized like they're more than the people you see on TV. They're just people, just like you. They have their own experiences, and we were just talking. I'm young, just on and on yapping, and he's just having a caring conversation with me, and that's just something that's gonna stay with me for a while.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's a cool story for sure. All right, going back to TCU a little bit, looking at the roster this year, we've got Frankie Collins committed and CJ Walker committed already, and a few transfers coming in soon. Have you gotten a chance to talk to any of those guys yet and see what their games are like?
I have not. I haven't talked to them at all. I've seen a little bit of clips, but I'm really waiting for the season to get to, you know, kind of, I mean, rebuild the team, rebuild the relationships with everybody. I had to experience that this year, being a freshman coming in, meeting a lot of new people. So
yeah.
I don't think it'll be too hard to do a second time. Mm-hmm. But I'm looking forward to getting to meet the guys.
Yeah, for sure. Any of the incoming freshmen you've gotten a chance to get to know?
I know them. I don't know them too well personally, but we're cool. Cool guys.
Yeah. Were you we talked to Isaiah about it a little bit, like he was involved with some recruiting. Were you involved this year with any recruiting stuff? Were you a good host whenever you had an opportunity to be?
Yeah, we went to a lot of recruit dinners, and we just talked to their parents, got to know them, just telling them our experience, our true experience here, which is all good. And just showing some of our personalities so they know what kind of kids they have in their program. But most of the recruits that are going to be here next year, Isaiah knows some of them because they live around his area, or they've just been around his area. So he's got a lot of time to build relationships with them through the years.
Yeah, I heard a lot about E-Man and Isaiah too, how they kind of had a relationship where they were kind of close, you know, playing style wise and anything like that. Did you have any guards last year who kind of took you under their wing, especially to be that mentor? Or is it just kind of like a whole team thing?
It was really a team thing, but it was one of the guards who didn't play, like Darius. Yeah. Ford, he was always a good person to be around, good vibes. He has good advice, he's going to do the right thing. He's a good teammate. He's going to push you and challenge you. And that's just something I'm glad I got to experience my freshman year, that I didn't have a bunch of guys like, you're redshirting, like you could take today off. You don't really need to do this lift. Like, we were all holding each other accountable, and that just needs to carry on in the TCU culture.
Yeah, no, we're gonna miss Darius for sure next year. I know he's in the portal now, but yeah, he definitely seemed like one of the best leaders and vibes guy on the team.
Something kind of random about last year's team was you and Jameer both were sons of NBA players. Did that ever come up? And did you ever know him before TCU because of that?
I did not know him before TCU, but just during the season, I'll throw in a joke there about his dad. He'll throw in a joke there about my dad. But it's kind of crazy how his dad has played in the league and was a very good player. My dad played in the league and was a good player, and we're on the same team now. I think that's very,
yeah,
I think that's mind blowing.
That's cool.
Yeah, obviously you'll get a chance to finally play next year, and it seems like you're going to play pretty big minutes. What goals do you have for next year, either number wise or just as a player?
I really just want to produce and have an impact. And I want to win as a team. That's the main goal. I want to do what I can do to win. People don't really know what's going on with the basketball program right now. Everybody's kind of on their toes to see what we're going to do or what's going to happen. But I mean, I have confidence in us. Me, Isaiah and Ernest are the only returners that I know of now.
Yeah.
And we just have to play our part, be vocal. We have to be leaders at a young age. And I'm looking forward to that challenge.
Yeah. Yeah, with like I guess a lot of the roster kind of unknown right now. It's hard to put like a real expectation on the team, but do you expect to, you know, obviously I know you expect to be a competitive team, but what do you imagine like this kind of new look, new era of TCU basketball is going to look like?
I think it's very exciting. We're going to have a group of new guys coming from everywhere. So what we could do, nobody knows what we could do yet. Nobody here has really played with each other. I haven't even played a basketball game with Isaiah yet. So I think it's going to be very cool to mix all these players from around the country onto one team and go out and play.
Yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned you, Isaiah, and Uday are the only returners you know coming back. Obviously, I think Esom has another year to exercise. Do you know anything about him if he is coming? I don't want you to speak for him or anything, but if he's going to exercise that last year of eligibility?
I have no idea at all, but I did see him today, and we were in the gym playing pickup, and he's looking better every day.
Awesome. That's what I like to hear.
Great. That's great. Well, Jace, we really appreciate you coming on. This has been fun. I know Isaiah had mentioned that he's into the journalism thing. He's a journalism major. It sounds like you have your dad as a pod. You were on that pod, obviously, for your commitment. So if you ever want to come back, we'd love to have you. It's been fun getting to know you, getting to talk to you.
It was fun. Same here. Same here.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Jace. I'm hyped to see what you got going on next year. And I like the tweets up and going. You know, I see you poking fun at Isaiah here and there.
I'm trying to get back on my tweeting game.
Yeah, no, I like what we got going on there. So I'm stoked to see what you got going on next year and see how you're gonna develop for sure.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Appreciate you coming on.
No problem.
Yeah. Open invitation anytime you want.
Okay.
All right. I'll catch you.
All right. Thank you.
Good one. Bye.
Bye.
All right. That was Jace Posey, redshirt freshman for TCU. A big thanks to him again for coming on the pod and talking with us. We appreciate it a lot. Thank you to the listeners once again. Nick and I have had a lot of fun getting to talk basketball for the last couple of months. And as the recruiting transfer portal stuff continues to come in, any news that happens, we'll obviously be back. We'll be back throughout the offseason talking TCU, Big 12 hoops. So don't go anywhere. Keep coming back. We appreciate it a lot. As always, my name is Davis Wilson. My co-host is Nick Germani, and we will see you next time.